Hello and welcome to Interesting Times, found on the web at http://xmail.net/interestingtimes/. Today's segment will focus on 9/11 Mysteries, a relatively recent documentary concerning the terror attacks at the World Trade Center and Pentagon. This film, the first of four parts in the 9/11 mystery series, is subtitled Demolitions, and it focuses exclusively on the World Trade Center compound and its demolition, by whatever means, remains somewhat of a mystery, although certain facts have come to light which have rendered the subject a bit clearer, and that is the subject matter, which we'll be talking about a bit here as we review the film. One of the first salient facts, quite striking, that leaps out at one watching the movie is the old argument, or one of the first arguments, anyhow, that was made in favor of a plane impact collapse of the Twin Towers. That is, that the impact of the plane striking the building for each of the two main towers was sufficient to damage the building in such a way that it would collapse completely less than 2 hours after impact. As stated, one of the first statements in support of that realm of thought, that way of thinking, is that when the towers were designed decades ago, not too many decades ago, but a couple of decades ago, the largest plane available that was known, that was built at that time, was the 707, the Boeing 707, and therefore the towers were designed to withstand one of those. And since the 767, a newer plane, hit it, well, that was the reason they fell, is that they weren't designed to withstand the impact of the 767, the newer plane. This doesn't make that much sense on its face, because, well, wouldn't they have designed it to withstand perhaps multiple impacts, or, you know, slightly overshoot the actual damage that would be caused, create some kind of a buffer there, so that, you know, if the 707 happened to just freakishly be going a little bit faster, or be full of lead or something of that nature, have some more momentum striking the building, you know, that they wouldn't lose a $1 billion building, or however much it cost at that time, to just, some slight fraction of what they had calculated for the towers to withstand. So we're starting from there. So starting from there, as we are, it makes sense then to actually say, okay, well, wait, how much does a 707 weigh in comparison to the 767, right? Because that would be relevant, because if they're the same size, what difference does it make? But it turns out, as pointed out in the film, incidentally, the first time this has been pointed out in about, oh, probably the dozen or so films that have been made on the subject of what really happened at the Twin Towers on September 11th, 2001, a date we have all heard way too many times. However, the weight of an empty 707 is, now the units are missing here, but we've got 146.4, and we'll guesstimate that that's 146,400 pounds. Regardless, we're comparing even units here. But the weight empty is this 146.4 of the 707. Now, the 767, in comparison, empty, weighs 180.5. So you've got a fair difference there. However, a 707 can carry much more fuel than a 767, thus rendering the total weight when the planes are loaded with fuel and whatever else they're carrying. The 707 is now up to a 333 maximum, and the 767, 300 maximum. So, therefore, we can see that the towers were designed to withstand a fully loaded 707, which is actually heavier than a 767. So, end of argument there. Interestingly, on a very similar topic, Frank Martini, the construction project manager for the towers, who has been missing since the towers collapsed that day. It's not stated whether he was in the towers or not. One might assume that, but this was not stated clearly. Is quoted as saying that the towers were designed to withstand these impacts from the fully loaded 707, and could probably sustain several strikes, comparing the building's the outside structure to mosquito netting, where if you poke a pencil through mosquito netting, the whole screen doesn't fall out of the window. It retains its integrity, except for the point of puncture where the pencil would go through the net, creating a hole. And the towers, being heavily redundant in their weight-bearing capacity, exhibit this exact characteristic, where we've all seen the plane, the plane enter the building, create a hole. The hole is there an hour later before the building collapses, and the rest of the building is largely unaffected, as one would expect. Thus, it appears from this sort of evidence that the plane impact was definitely not, probably not even a major contributor to any structural types of failures in the building, as various government agencies positing the official line that fire brought down the buildings have suggested that we swallow. This is not recommended, however, as many more independent of that kind of money and influence researchers would suggest. Along the same lines, PBS, that's your tax dollars at work with the public broadcasting station, released a program detailing the pancake model of the floor collapses in the Twin Towers, which illustrates collapse due to fire weakening each floor, and eventually a point was reached where one floor fell on top of another straight down, and they quote-unquote pancaked, so goes the term, down one on top of the next, on top of the next, etc. However, the interesting point in the model, the computer-generated model employed in the illustration of this suggested explanation, is that each of the Twin Towers had at its core large, thick, heavy steel beams, known as the core of the building, and had dozens of these core columns, which were the strongest part of the building. In the computer-generated model, however, the floors collapsing one on top of the other are visible, however, the core remains standing, which we don't see in the actual building collapse. The whole building goes in a gigantic volcanic-type cloud of dust. What happened to the core? Nobody knows, officially. And the pancake computer-generated model doesn't help us out very much either. As far as the cloud of dust goes, generally when a building is taken down, that is, an old building, you know, condemned, what have you, is scheduled for destruction, the building is pulled onto itself, imploded, usually. The internal support mechanisms are destroyed, the building falls onto itself relatively neatly. Many videos of such collapses are available. Quite a few are shown in the 9/11 Mysteries film, Part 1, that we're reviewing now. However, and we do see that in World Trade Center Building 7, which we'll get to in just a minute. However, the Twin Towers went down differently. They exploded rather than imploded, which officially was caused by about 10,000 gallons of jet fuel. Now, calculations aren't at hand. This is something like a large room. Well, you think of a fish tank, a fairly large fish tank, being about 50 gallons there. So times two, you've got 100. Do the math. It's a somewhat large room full of kerosene, jet fuel, supposedly. Now go back and watch the tapes. Get the mainstream media tapes. Ask yourself, can, let's say, a 10-foot by 10-foot room full of jet fuel, it's, in fairness, probably a larger room. I don't have the calculations in front of me. However, would a fairly large room full of jet fuel really be able to explode a 100-story building all over the city? That is, pieces were ejected hundreds of feet off of the building. Neatly cut steel pieces, incidentally. Steel beams, which is also covered in the movie, and which is will be coming up on in a minute. But pieces were ejected hundreds and hundreds of feet away. Now, this is kerosene we're talking about. Let's think rationally here. Can a small amount, relative to the building at least, relative to most buildings, in fact, be able to accomplish such a physical feat? Well, you can calculate the amount of potential energy held in that amount of kerosene? The answer is no. No, it can't. So what did? Because the buildings exploded rather than imploded, the question of how exactly, if explosive charges were used, what kind and what technique was used is something of a mystery, even to the explosive crews, professional explosive crews that the 9/11 Mysteries team spoke with and interviewed for the film, which are in there. They look at the collapse of the Twin Towers and have questions, even about how it would be done, because it's not standard. Even if it were a controlled, standard type, controlled demolition, as is Building 7, not hit by a plane, yet imploded perfectly onto itself at 5:30 in the afternoon on 9/11, and which is a fact many people aren't privy to, because it was covered the first day, and pretty much not at all after that. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was assisting in putting together the report explaining the collapse of the buildings, states that even the most likely hypothesis for the collapse of Building 7 has a low probability of actually explain of having actually happened. So they say they don't know. They don't know what did it. Go on the internet, watch the collapse. You could tell, write them a letter, because it'll be pretty obvious, actually, what brought down Building 7. But as for the two other towers, they explode in, again, this volcano-like fashion, leading many theories to come out. Since it's a very non-standard operation, no building really, there's no reason, if you're taking a building down, to blow it up and eject the pieces all over. You know, you would want to keep it as neat as possible, more or less, to make the cleanup as easy as possible. So the process of how the Twin Towers were taken down is not fully understood, would require a more detailed investigation with some real evidence present, Freudian slip, on hand to get into the forensics of the collapse. However, a researcher, Stephen E. Jones, former physics professor at Brigham Young, also worked for the United States government on a cold fusion project that is non-explosive nuclear reactions, deriving energy from non-explosive nuclear reactions, hence the term cold fusion, as opposed to a bomb, which would be very warm fusion. He suggests thermite, an incendiary used to cut steel beams like a hot knife through butter. It gets very hot, in fact, about 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit, hot enough to cut steel, and commonly used in taking down support columns for buildings for their demolition. Likely, given that molten metal pools were found beneath the remains of the Twin Towers and Building 7, thus for burning for weeks, as it's possible that if thermite was used, a thermite reaction was continuing on for weeks, producing this very hot molten metal. And indeed, some of the beams that were photographed against the orders of Mayor Rudolph Giuliani of New York City, who ordered that there not be any photography of the crime scene, which was violated when all the evidence was destroyed and removed, hauled off to New Jersey and shipped off to China to be turned into cars. But it can be seen that some of the support columns were cut at an angle, which is consistent with thermite usage, which creates what demolition crews term a walking, where the column is cut at an angle, therefore the top of the building slides over, hence it walks a few feet to the left and comes down completely. When the demolition crews are interviewed, it can lead one to wonder, what does it take to induce compliance in a request such as destroy the World Trade Center? For demolition crews who are few in number as far as possession of the technical knowledge required to lace up a building full of incendiaries and explosives in order to ensure a clean collapse, that the building doesn't fall sideways, etc., that it comes down neatly, as all three collapses of September 11th did. Is it money? Is it some notion of a greater good, that society must undergo a transformation and deception has to be used? These questions remain, as do the questions of the actual identities of the culprits, if indeed they're still alive and have not been eliminated as loose ends now, 5 years after the fact. Time is ticking to uncover those facts. And a brief note on the dust cloud, which rushed through the city as the buildings came down. Some witnesses, victims you might say, passers-by who witnessed the scene, were struck by what they felt like people throwing gravel at their back, what one man described as a tornado of darkness tearing through the city, an apt metaphor for what has happened in the United States ever since, as we witness what may well be the last days of even an ostensibly free society, where the jig really comes to an end. However, as we face facts like these, it may become possible, as already millions, tens of millions, in fact, of quote-unquote ordinary, although maybe none of us are ordinary, who knows, however you want to look at that, of Americans and people worldwide, where, incidentally, outside the United States, this is not the kind of tricky debate that it is inside the tightly constructed, mind-controlled box of the corporate-controlled media, which author, researcher Webster Tarpley cites as being absolutely essential for carrying out this kind of activity. If you have an honest media, you can't get away with this kind of crime, at least this easily. It takes quite a bit for evidence contrary to the official story of 9/11 to get even a minute's worth of airtime, and even then it's treated about as in as hostile a fashion as can be imagined by both the left and the right, quote-unquote, if indeed these are two separate entities. But as these hordes of viewers of these movies internalize these facts, I believe that another kind of demolition charge is being laid, a metaphorical demolition charge is being laid among the core columns that have been built in our minds by this system of slavery, not always external, but certainly internal, brick by brick, that has been put by television, by radio, by the mind control industry, known as the corporate controlled media, which, along with education and the public school system and even the private school system, with their official stories, their consensus views forced upon all of us since from our earliest days, from as soon as we understand language and even before, the views put in our mind, brick by brick, building us a cage which we carry around, a cage which is being put up for demolition by the truth about not only the phony terrorism of September 11th, but of all of the misdeeds of conspiratorial factions, corrupt factions, acting in concert within the power establishment, as it's always been. Always. And the more disturbed people grow, viewing, researching, uncovering more and more facts, they realize that every area of their lives has been touched, corrupted, encaged by these menacing lies that we have been told, spoon-fed, force-fed, in many cases. And we've been told that there is no alternative. But we know differently, judging from movies like 9/11 Mysteries, and eagerly anticipate the release of the next few segments of that film covering the Pentagon, the hijackers, and who may have been behind the attacks. To be covered, hopefully, in future segments of Interesting Times. Next time, we'll be looking at the research and findings of Barbara Honegger, the author of The October Surprise, detailing corruption within the Reagan-Bush administration of the 1980s, about 9/11, and anomalies at the Pentagon. See you all then.